Don Jameson. We're here with Don Jameson. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be here, Tom. It's been a while.
I know it has. Your hair looks very soft. Did you just shampoo it?
I know. It looks fantastic, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Hello?
How to be Tom Shalhoub. Starring Tom Shalhoub. You know, not everybody wants to be Tom Shalhoub. But for those people who do, I guess this podcast is for them. I mean, you got to model yourself after someone, right? Might as well be me, Tom Shalhoub.
Like, yep, deep conditioning and, you know, get 8 hours of rest for it every night. And
yeah, well, it's very important. Hair for someone like yourself is very important because you are a metal guy, and you have the, you know, you have to keep the look going on. Do you play in a band?
No, I really don't. You know, yeah. I mean, you know, definitely, you know, made a lot of my career interviewing rock stars. And
yes,
no, other than the fabulous hair, that's about it for my musical talents.
Yeah. Well, you know, you have a rep to protect. And, you know, when I've seen you on other podcasts and things, oftentimes you have the, you know, the tank top, you know, you're exposing your arms the way that rock and rollers do.
I put on a collar just for you today, Tom.
Yeah. Well, why don't we start by, we'll basically do two things. We'll start with music and then we'll do comedy. Sure. I talk to so many people about, you know, issues and politics, especially because of the Gutfeld thing in Fox News. I think when I get somebody who's outside of that world, especially from the comedy world, I want to just not talk about any issues, like pretend politics doesn't exist. What do you think of that?
Oh, God, I pray that every morning when I wake up, but then I turn on the news and it betrays me every day, Tom. But I'm down with that. It's like talking musicians, when I hang out with them backstage, they don't want to talk about music. They'd rather talk about sports or pretty much anything else, or they want to talk about comedy.
Yeah. So let's talk about music. You are a metal guy. That's, you know, you and Florentine. Just give the, for people who don't know, I always feel like everybody knows everything, but, you know, like the stuff you guys did with your metal show.
Yeah, we did 14 seasons of a program called That Metal Show, and it was on VH1 Classic, not VH1, VH1 Classic, mm-hmm. which is like the Stephen Baldwin of TV networks. but that was good because we had a long run there, you know, and we interviewed just about everybody in rock and roll. It wasn't just metal, you know, in the conventional sense of the word. You know, we had the women from Hard On. You know, we had Styx on our show, and then we had some more modern bands as well. You know, we had the guys from Black Sabbath and Guns N' Roses. You know, we interviewed Axl. So, you know, we covered a lot of territory. We did that for 14 seasons, and now we're doing a new show on YouTube called That Rocks. The three of us again, myself, Jim, and Eddie Trunk. And we're like 18 episodes into that. So similar kind of vibe. If you're into rock and roll and interviews and all that jazz, that's what we're about.
I love that stuff. And so let's talk about that when you said not just metal, but other bands like Styx. So let's just go through some bands. We're going to play a game called Is This Band Metal? And by that, okay. I guess, heavy. Would you put it in the heavy metal category? If there were a heavy metal channel on Sirius XM, would this band be played? So let's start with Van Halen. Are they heavy metal?
Well, they wouldn't be considered heavy metal. They'd be considered hard rock. So they'd be played on, you know, Ozzy's Boneyard or Hair Nation.
Okay. So is Ozzy heavy metal?
Ozzy is definitely metal. You know, Ozzy, of course, came, you know, onto the scene with Black Sabbath, who most people agree are the creators of heavy metal.
Yeah. So, okay, Bon Jovi.
Well, they would fit, they would, what they would loosely call hair, the hair metal category, yeah. But they've not done that, Tom, in years and years and years. They're sort of like Def Leppard, right? They're this huge.
That was next on my list. Act.
That's what?
That was next on my list.
Okay. Yeah. It's this big sort of, we're kind of a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Band, but our roots are in rock music.
AC/DC.
Yeah. Hard rock.
Hard rock. Yeah, but yeah. Not, you know, so when the metal guys get together, if you're having a talk about metal and someone says AC/DC, do you cut them off and say, hey, that's hard rock? Or are these lines blurry enough so that, I mean, all metal guys like AC/DC, right?
Yeah, I don't know any human on earth, pretty much, who doesn't like some AC/DC. So they're really, they're sort of the exception to the rule, them and Metallica. Most people will say, you know, if you say, oh yeah, I'm into metal, they'll go, oh, I like AC/DC or Metallica.
Yeah.
You know, those are the safe ones. But no, I never cut off anybody and go, no.
Yeah. It's like, I'm trying to think of, because a lot of metal is, I mean, would Metallica be almost a definitive metal band?
Yeah. 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 Metal's in the name, right? And yeah. And still headlining stadiums, you know, not only they're the biggest metal band in the world, but they're also just one of the biggest bands in the world. So,
yeah. Okay. After AC/DC, this is one of my favorite bands of all time. Maybe my favorite, because they were just so, you know, I had all their albums in the 80s and I just went to see them fairly recently in Stamford. Cheap Trick.
Oh yeah, well, no, Cheap Trick is, you know, a rock band.
Yeah,
you know, but they're, you know, they are encased in that world. I mean, you think of the influence that those guys have had on all these other bands that we've been talking about. It's immense, and they're still going, and they're in their mid 70s, and they're still great. I've probably seen them 35 times.
Yeah,
I mean, they're unbelievable. I saw them play in somebody's house once.
Really? How long ago was that?
It was like two Decembers ago. This guy that I know up in Massachusetts, he's got a few bucks.
Yep.
And he said, hey, Don, what are you doing December 9th? And I go, I don't know. He goes, I want you to come to my house. I hired Cheap Trick to play a party.
It's unbelievable.
So here I am watching Cheap Trick in front of, you know, 75 people. And they played for 2 hours. It was unbelievable, man.
Yeah. Yeah. When I saw them recently, I was really surprised at how, obviously Rick Nielsen is, I think he might be the oldest guy in the group, but he can't, you know, he can't sling those guitars around the way he used to. He basically just comes out and like any dude in his 70s, he kind of stands very still and plays his guitar, but it's very, you know, they're very musical, very good. And, Robin Zander, the singer, I mean, I don't know how he could ever sing the way he could, but the way that he can, he has a very, you know, he has a hard rock pop voice, but he also has a very hard edged kind of metal voice when he wants to. And he is screaming for 2 hours. A lot of those old songs, they were very on the very hard edged rock. And I don't know how any of these guys do it, how they keep up the vocals.
Well, because, and you know, Tom, that's a great point, because, you know, guys like Robin, we had Brian Johnson from AC/DC on That Metal Show, Joe Elliott from Def Leppard, you know, on That Metal Show. And they were both, you know, their early albums were produced by Mutt Lange, who convinced them to sing way up here. They were singing here in the clubs, you know, and then he goes, no, this is the sound now. You sing up here. But you're not, when you're 23 or 24, you're not thinking, I'm going to be singing these songs 30, 40, even 50 years later. So, you know, these guys are like, you know, now I still got to hit these notes, you know, and it doesn't get easier as you get older. But a guy like Robin Zander, man, he's just an anomaly.
Yeah. It's interesting. I saw Billy Joel and he pitches everything down about a minor third. I kind of went through, I had to have my pitch pipe because I was with Jimmy Fallon. Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy's Barbershop Quartet, we went to Madison Square Garden to sing Happy Birthday to Billy Joel. So we were there for the whole concert. We came out, we sang Happy Birthday in four-part harmony, and then I watched the rest of the show. But I had my pitch pipe with me for the barbershop, and I was doing the pitch and writing them down because I knew they were a little bit lower because, you know, all pop songs are very high. Like you said, the producers at some point, they kind of went around to everyone and they were like, we have to pitch everything up as high as you can sing it. Why did that happen? Why is everything so high?
Yeah. Well, yes, yeah, so they were high in many ways back in the, yeah, in the early to mid 80s. But that was the, you know, that was the sound, Tom. You know, it was to give it a more commercial appeal. And, you know, again, like I know the guys from Def Leppard, man, they're backstage for an hour, sometimes 2 hours, vocalizing. They warm up, man, before every show because, hey, they still got to sing Photograph and, you know, all those early hits from those, you know, from Pyromania and all that stuff. And, you know, they do it, but, you know, they just can't, like, you know, crank down a six-pack and then run out there and do it like they did when they were younger. But they sing 100% live, and they still do it. So it's pretty amazing, man.
Yeah. Okay, so as you know, I did Cheap Trick there. Guns N' Roses was my next one. I think you already mentioned them. So they're hard rock, but people would call them metal as well, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like when we did that metal show, the tagline at the top was always, "You're home of all things hard rock and heavy metal."
Yeah.
Because those worlds really, you know, do mix. And like I said, when we branched out a little bit more, we started to include the classic rock artists because, I mean, now, you know, Motley Crue is sort of classic rock. If you think about it,
yeah,
you know, they're, yeah, going on 40 years together.
Yeah. And I think a lot of those bands, because of that, you know, whatever it was, like you called the hair bands, like the 1980s, there were so many arena bands like Journey or REO Speedwagon that weren't heavy metal at all, but they had all of the trappings of it. They had the singer who was screaming up in the high heavens. They had the distorted guitars. But they were kind of doing, I guess, like anthem rock, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, that, and then because of that, they've got no respect from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which is so shameful. But
Journey?
No, Journey's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Foreigner's not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You know,
I mean, that's crazy.
It's insane. The band said, I'm not, you know, I know they try to be, you know, woke, and, you know, we're going to put Missy Elliott in and Willie Nelson and Madonna and LL Cool J. And I have no problem with that. That's just the way they run it. But it's like, who's not in? That's the problem.
Yeah.
I mean, Journey's not in and Foreigner's not in, you know, Bad Company's not in. You got to be kidding me. Paul Rogers is one of the greatest vocalists of all time. I don't care how many pitch pipes you bring to that show. He will never be off key.
Yeah. The Foreigner, obviously, I was actually, Journey doesn't surprise me, even though they are great and should be in anything that's called the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, obviously, because they are like absolutely the soundtrack to, you know, not only the Sopranos at the you know, their last episode, but the whole 1980s. You know, that's why there's a whole decade that is, you know, Journey kind of brings that out. When you hear a Journey song, it's like you're driving in the car on the way home from the prom, if you're, you know, Gen X like myself. But the Foreigner, that is a group, that's another group that was hard rock, okay? And that guy could scream like nobody's business, but also kind of like granny rock too. Like some of their soft rock tunes, it's almost elevator music.
Yeah, yacht rock.
Yeah.
All right. it's insane that they're not in there. And I think something like that's just a personal grudge. But the funny thing about Foreigner now, I don't know if you've seen them recently.
No.
They are doing a farewell tour with, yeah, zero original members.
Really?
And I'm like, who's saying goodbye?
Yeah.
Like everyone who said farewell already said farewell years ago. But that's the way it is now.
That singer, he's not around anymore?
Lou Gramm is still around, and occasionally he does get up and jam with them, but he hasn't been in decades. He had a lot of health problems, and they got this young, good-looking guy to come in and take his place. And I got to say, the guy does it brilliantly, but over time, you know, people have left the band, and even Mick Jones, who's the, you know, original founding member, you know, Mick's in his late 70s. Yeah. So he, you know, he'll show up every fifth or sixth show and do like the last three songs. So you're basically seeing a cover band, and you know what, but those songs, everyone loves those songs, so nobody cares. That's the big thing in rock now, Tom, is it's the brand, not the band anymore. If you can put that logo up there, it says, you see that AC/DC with the lightning bolt in the middle, you don't care who's in there, as long as they play You Shook Me All Night Long, Highway to Hell, and all the other hits that you love, and people will come.
Well, they'll come even if it's not, I mean, they will come to see, you know, Thunder Road. If it's a good enough Springsteen cover band, they will, people don't care.
Yeah.
You know, I saw a Springsteen cover band up at the Woodlock Pines. You know, it's like a family resort. And it was a riot because there were like women who were acting as if Springsteen was on stage. They were losing it, jumping up and down, like, you know. And because, you know, to them, it doesn't matter. The music's live. It's rocking. They're going to get into it. So I can see people, if they go to see a band that, you know, none of the band members, a lot of these people, they didn't even know who was in the band. Outside the singer, oftentimes they can't tell who it is. And then a band like the Eagles, it doesn't really matter who's in it because so many people changed over the years, you know?
Yeah, I guess there's a subculture of cover band groupies, you know, like groupies who couldn't make it with the actual band. So they just, we'll go stalk the cover Bruce Springsteen band.
You know who I would see? I would go to see Steely Dan, even though I think Donald Fagen may be the only one, you know, it was really just two guys and then other people. What do you think of Steely Dan? Because I'm often getting conversations with people. I love Steely Dan, but I think a lot of rock guys are like, oh, Steely Dan, like they're almost the butt of a joke because their music is so esoteric and like jazzy. But just from from the perspective of, you know, a metal guy, what do you think of Steely Dan?
I mean, you know, that was something that just that played on the radio when I was a kid. So I guess I kind of like it because it sounds familiar to me from, you know, being a kid and riding around the car with my mom, which is where I heard, you know, most of my music growing up. So stuff like that, especially stuff from the 70s, is cool. The thing about those guys is like, they tell you like when you're setting up like speakers and stuff in your house, like play Steely Dan, cause they're so precise and you know, the music is just, you should put all your settings so that if Steely Dan sounds amazing in your house, anything's going to sound great.
Yeah, it's true. I will listen to Steely Dan with the headphones on, and it's kind of like they got those like hi-hats and you hear them in your brain. You know, like, I don't know how they do that. Do you do LPs? Are you one of these vinyl guys?
Sitting next to a stack of them right now.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I got Ozzy, Loudness.
Oh, that's great.
More Ozzy. Yeah, I started recollecting like 15 years ago, Tom, and I'm just like, you know, I don't have kids, I don't do drugs, so that's my, you know, addiction is vinyl. So I spend all my money on vinyl, and I feel okay about it because, you know, if you're gonna have an addiction, that's a pretty good one.
Yeah, and are you a non-drinker as well?
I drink, but I'm, you know, not a. I spend way more on vinyl than beer.
But you're a veg too, right?
I am.
Yes. So that's, you know, that's a part of the, you know, when you're peeling away the layers of the Don Jameson onion, oftentimes you're kind of like, what? He's a vegetarian, you know, a metal I mean, just that heavy metal vegetarian. That's kind of unique right there.
Well, the bass player from Black Sabbath has been a vegetarian and a vegan for like 60 years. And he grew up, you know, his family worked in factories in Birmingham, England, and somehow he became a vegetarian. Uh-huh. And he's one of the greatest bass players in heavy metal of all time. So if it's good enough for Geezer Butler, it's good enough for me.
Yeah, I was looking at a clip of the Police just on Facebook this morning. Somebody had a clip of the Police, and it was like a shot of from behind the drum kit, and Stuart Copeland is wailing away. And it was like in those days when guys would just wear like gym shorts and like no shirt, you know, and he's just, you know, playing the drums. And he's burning off so many calories. And, you know, the police, they were all skinny. You know, Sting is still skinny. He's probably a vegetarian, right, Sting? I'm sure of it.
He only eats paint chips.
Yeah, exactly. And McCartney is a vegetarian, famously. But the just watching Stuart Copeland wailing away on those drums, I'm thinking, like, those guys could have had, like, six meals a day. They wouldn't have gained a pound. The way that, like, rock and roll, how much you burn off touring. It's just crazy. Hours and hours a night, just like the physicality is amazing. So Styx, you interviewed the guys from Styx. You mean the guys except for Dennis DeYoung, right? The singer from Styx? Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, because now Dennis DeYoung has not been in Styx for decades.
Yeah.
So Tommy Shaw and J.Y. Young both came on the show. And what we started to do the last few seasons, which was my favorite seasons of doing the show, is we always tried to make an interesting combination of guests. So when we had the guys from Styx on, we had Vinnie Paul, the drummer from Pantera, on the same show.
Yeah.
It's because you wanted to try, let's mix this up and see what we could create here. And what you find out is, you know, Vinnie Paul is a huge Styx fan, but you would never expect a guy from Pantera to be a Styx fan. But he was. Like, we had Corey Taylor from the band Slipknot, which is like the heaviest band on earth, on with the guys from Night Ranger, you know, Sister Christian.
Yes.
And it was perfect. And he loved those guys. So I always love when we did that, when we made those worlds collide.
I love that. I was watching a show, Daryl's Garage or something. Daryl, you know, who's Hall & Oates? Daryl Hall.
Live from Daryl's.
Yeah, live from Daryl's Garage, because he's got a recording studio in there. But of course, I'm a Cheap Trick fan. So Cheap Trick was in his garage. And, you know, it was surprising to me that Daryl Hall was such a huge Cheap Trick fan and knew all their songs and was demanding to sing harmony on, you know, Heaven Tonight or whatever. So they're going through all these Cheap Trick songs and he's singing with them. And it was just so entertaining. I had to watch the whole show, you know?
Those guys, but, you know, a lot of those guys, you know, they did a lot of cocaine together in the 70s. So,
yeah,
you know, that brought a lot of people together back then.
Yeah, that's right. So with Styx, my Styx knowledge is kind of limited, but I think I did see their Behind the Music, which is one of my favorite Behind the Musics, because they, you know, they couldn't stand this lead singer after a while. He was trying to turn the band into some kind of theme park, like theatrical event, right? And it was driving them crazy. And the way they describe it, just through sheer force of will, he wanted to bring, I don't know, what was it? It was kind of almost like a Donnie and Marie sensibility to this band where he wanted to do like sketches, like, you know, live sketches. And that's where that whole Domo Arigato thing, he wanted to create like a character. And did you talk to those guys about that?
Well, yeah, because they didn't play after he left. They refused to play that song for forever. They said, we're never playing Mr. Roboto ever again. And then they finally relented, because, you know, I think it's a silly song, but it's a popular song and the fans want to hear it when they go see him. But yeah, maybe I think Dennis DeYoung wanted to make it a little, he wanted to be a little more Broadway. They wanted to be a little more rock and roll.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So it is funny. I always found it hilarious. I mean, even The Who got into this with their kind of, when people would do these concept albums and the rock opera, you know, when you look back at it now, it is kind of, a lot of it is kind of silly, but they were trying. Like, to me, it is amazing. Some of these concept albums, the length of rope that was given to these artists to do some pretty weird stuff. And I guess because the music industry was just making money hand over fist. And then occasionally something that was really a bizarre album, like Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon, right? I mean, that is a crazy album, but it was like the best selling album of all time. So they allowed these bands to just really do some weird stuff that I just don't think will ever happen again.
Oh no, because now we, you know, back in the day, Tom, right? We would get You get Pink Floyd, The Wall, and it was, you know, you got the vinyl, and it was the gatefold open, and the artwork was insane, and all the lyrics were, and you studied every lyric and all that stuff. And now, you know, everyone cherry picks music. You know, no one puts out a double album anymore. Like, the only person that's done that recently, Smashing Pumpkins, just put out a triple album. Which nobody's looking for these days, but I just love that that Billy Corgan said, I don't care about the current state of the music business where people just cherry pick songs off their iTunes or Apple Music or whatever. He's like, I'm doing it, you know, the old school way. Never forget double album. I'm going triple album. I love that old sensibility because again, I'm, you know, with vinyl and everything, I get wrapped up in the artwork of it and the lyrics and all that stuff. You know, I'm the guy that's sat home, you know, in high school and read album credits.
Yeah, I mean, and I used to love it. Speaking of which, now I'm getting into, because I have my old Sony solid state stereo, and I'm spinning records on it. I bought this recently on Amazon, so I got Revolver, and that is something. You talk about the hi-fi. This was when they were experimenting with that separated sound, the separated channels. So those Beatles studio albums are really something else. And then, of course, I got Sinatra album here. And then I've got the Rolling Stones here, which is a kind of an interesting album, this one. But anyway, I like to now, I'm building up my vinyl collection once again, like you are.
I don't know why I don't know why I never got rid of my vinyls from the 80s, Tom. I put them in storage, never thinking they'd come back. And
oh, Don just went out. It's all right. I'll see if he appears again, then I'll bring him in. Let's see, it's 4:54. I know he had to go just after 5, but that wasn't him leaving. But when he comes back, we'll stick him in there. Maybe his phone ran out of batteries. He was talking to me on his iPhone. So anyway, even if that's the... I'll check my messages here, see if he's texting me. Nothing. Andrea Bryant. Don Jameson. And my manager called while we were waiting. So there, he's gone. So he signed off and now he's going to sign back on again and we'll see him. He'll click the link. So this was kind of unexpected. We ended up doing music for the whole thing, but if he does get back in, we'll continue with a little bit of the comedy discussion. Because I want to know what Don does for gigs now. Like, where do you get the gigs? Here he is here.
Yeah.
Very good. We're back.
I don't know if that was on my end or yours, but I love that you're a vinyl guy.
Yes. And what do you think of the Beatles? I mean, you know, I talk about the Beatles with everybody because I love them so much. But someone like Greg Gutfeld is always like, the Beatles. Like, he doesn't like the Beatles. He likes punk rock. He likes the Sex Pistols. He likes everything after the 60s. But, I mean, I just feel like you have to like the Beatles, don't you?
I think I'm with Gutfeld on this one. But,
oh, you are?
Yeah. I like
now, your mic is dead. Like, something happened there. It's sounding terrible.
Sounding terrible. Hold on.
It's like, do you hear the distortion?
Is this better?
Yeah.
All right.
What'd you do?
I have no idea. I pressed the button. Gutfeld's Beatles is the Misfits. You know, that's his Beatles. But I like the flavoring of the Beatles because they did influence a lot of metal bands and Black Sabbath, even in particular. So I do like the flavoring of it, but I was just a little too young. Uh-huh. To really appreciate what they do. I can appreciate it better now. I like their later stuff. I don't like the She Loves Me, Yeah, Yeah, Yeah stuff. Yeah. I kind of like, you know, when they started doing LSD and stuff, they were better then.
Right. Yeah, obviously they have the eras. But I love the early Beatles stuff because of the vocals. You know, as a barbershop singer, they have such great harmonies. And I love fiddling around when I can pick up a guitar. I learn the easiest Beatles songs I can usually get through, but some of them are quite hard. Even the early songs are quite difficult to learn. So anyway, I love the I love everything about the Beatles, but that's what I especially love about the early Beatles is the vocals. So let's wrap this up with comedy. What are you doing now? Like, what's happening in the business? How do you get gigs now? Because when you and I were doing comedy in the 90s, you went around, you played stand-up New York, and, you know, Cary Hoffman would either sign you as, you know, he would become your manager, or, you know, or you might sign with the comic strip. And most people were kind of like signed by a comedy club manager. And then you would just, you know, forge a career based on that. So you'd find your home club, you'd do the road, you'd get a road booker, and you'd piece together money from the weekend gigs. And then you didn't make any money in New York, but you stayed in New York as much as you could, because you might get auditions for VH1 or some other shows like that. So how do you get gigs now?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's sort of the same catch 22 with music. It's like, you know, the whole business model changed, and you know, so some of it, or a lot of it, for the worse, for the, as far as the artists, I think, but there is some good stuff. And in terms of applying to comedy, I think, you know, back in the day when we started, again, like, either did, you know, Letterman or The Tonight Show, or you did SNL, and that there weren't that many outlets for comics, you know, so everyone, that's why everybody worked on that fabulous 6 clean minutes, you know, you know, I'm going to get on Letterman and then, you know, and get catapulted. And I was like, I don't really fit into that mold of comic, and I don't do impressions, I don't do characters and stuff. I mean, you know, your Biden is unbelievable, by the way. But
thank you. But and you I'm know, not an impressionist. I fell into it, you know, it by necessity. I never did impressions, but because Gutfeld is a political show, I better do something to keep myself around. You know,
it's so deranged. I love it. Because Tom, if you said, like, when you're first starting out in comedy, it's like, well, where am I going with this? Am I going to try to get a Letterman? Am I going to try to do this? If you would have told me I was going to, you know, make some kind of impact with my two best friends talking about heavy metal on TV, I could have never believed that, because, you know, I think now with all these different outlets, you know, every comic can really find their niche. And that was mine. You know, I found like these two great worlds to collide, comedy and music, which are always my two biggest passions. My first two albums were George Carlin, Occupation Fool, and Kiss Destroyer. So I always thought, man, if I get good enough at comedy, maybe somehow I can get these things to merge together. And that's what happened. And then when we started doing that metal show, bands started asking me to come out on the road and open for them. So that's become a big part of my career in like the last like 10, 12 years, is actually going out. And I developed a 30-minute, you know, opening act for bands that's just all about music and musicians and stuff like that, as opposed to my nightclub act, which is going to be, you know, a little bit of everything.
Yeah. It is interesting that you talk about you had to find your own kind of thing, and it was like you and your buddies, but that's kind of the way everyone's doing it now. That metal show, that VH1 show that ran for so many years, it was almost like your podcast, and before podcasts existed, right? You found your own audience. It was not from the stand-up world. You didn't have success because of a Letterman set the way that everyone else, you know, did. Or Conan O'Brien, whatever happened to be, it was you and your buddies kind of sitting around doing what you wanted to do. It's very modern, really, isn't it?
Or retro. I mean, you know, a lot of people compared us to Wayne's World, but yes, yeah. I guess it's a different business model in terms of, you know, yes, gaining, you know, trying to gain also another audience rather than the ones that just come out on a Friday and Saturday night on a date. Hey, we're going to go see generic comedian whoever.
Yeah.
And now that's the other good thing, Tom, is like now with the internet, people can look you up and decide, because, you know, every comic puts their clips out there and people can watch and go, okay, I like this person, I don't like this person. So you get less people sort of caught off guard, and especially in this hypersensitive world that we are currently existing in, unfortunately. The one good thing is that people can look at clips of comics and decide, I like this, I don't like it. And I find you get the people who are a little more triggered, they don't really come out anymore. So the comedy scene, where you would think it's gotten a lot worse and people are a lot more sensitive, and most of those people stay home. That's what I'm finding.
Yeah. Yeah. It did seem grim for a while. It was kind of like, yes. Oh, wow, nobody can do anything. And you had people like the Comedy Cellar apologizing for, I don't know, whatever, for having Louis come there or something. I don't know what. And I'm thinking like, these are the venues that used to be about like, you know, hey, come into our bar. You know, it's gonna get rough. Don't be sensitive. This is comedy. And then everyone just started apologizing. But I think you are right, is that now you have people, there's a certain type of person that, you know, maybe Gen Z, they just don't want to go to a comedy club. They're kind of like, they're already triggered by the idea of it. So it's almost like an old school thing. I just did a show in San Francisco for the Fox News audience, basically, because that's how I get my audience now, is through Gutfeld. But I did a 4 o'clock show at the Punchline in San Francisco, sold out the room. People don't like that Fox crowd. They don't want to be out when it's dark. Like, first of all, they don't want to be in San Francisco. They're afraid of the city. No. So the only way I could get them to go to the club is say, hey, like, come out. You'll be home in bed, or you'll be home having dinner before the sun goes down. And they loved it. They loved it and appreciated it. And and I think that's going to be my model going forward, is these late afternoon shows. You know, it's like the retirees do down in Florida.
Tom Shalhoub's early bird special.
It's an early bird special. Absolutely. And I'll just ride that in, you know, for the golden years of my career.
But that's the good thing. We can DIY it now, Tom. Yeah. You know, I did HBO Inside the NFL for a season. I hosted a show on SNY called Beer Money. And then I got all these sports people to come into my world. So, you know, you have your nightclub people. Then you have, you know, I have a little section of people. You know, if I go to Home Depot, all the people know me from the sports stuff that I did. And then when I go to a rock concert, everyone knows me from that metal show. So, yeah, you just kind of like, you know, you get a hammer and nails and you sort of pound together an audience. And, you know, you and I, obviously, you know, we're a little older. And I think the good thing about that, too, is like, we got our audience now. So, you know, we don't really need to pander to anybody. You know, our audience knows what to expect from us. So, you know, I don't worry if there's a table of Gen Z are sitting there. You know, I want them to have a good time, but it might not.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's great. I know you have another appointment, but I think this was right in the pocket of what we wanted to do, Don. Just get on and chat for a bit and then say goodbye. What do you think of that?
Well, it's good. And if I could just mention here at the end that speaking of doing DIY things, I'm going to do a comedy special on September 24th. Uh-huh. Live at McSorley's Ale House in New York City.
Oh, yeah.
So
McSorley's, where do you do it?
We built a stage, and, you know, I got a producer and a director, and, you know how, for people who, you know, have no idea about McSorley's, it's still like the oldest pub in New York City. Like, Abe Lincoln drank at McSorley's. That's literally how old it is. So, but it's such a part of New York history. And instead of doing it in a comedy club and dealing with a bunch of red tape and politics, I'm like, nah, you know, I'm going to do it in an old school pub, a place I've gone, you know, with my friends for the last 30 years. And we're going to do it down there. And, you know, I've been telling comics that, and they all love the idea of it. They're like, man, that's such a fun idea to do a comedy special there. So, yeah, I'm excited about that. You don't have to follow, you know, there's no formula anymore. And that's what I really love about the scene now. Just, you know, do your thing.
So you're going to shoot at McSorley's. What street's it on?
On East 7th Street in New York City. And, yeah, I'll do two shows on September 24th. You can go to brownpapertickets.com and look up the event, and they're free. So if you want to come on down and get some laughs in an old school pub, my jokes won't be the oldest thing in there, luckily. Yeah,
exactly. And then, but for everybody else all across the country who doesn't live in New York, then they're going to be able to see this. Are you going to release it on YouTube? How are you going to do it?
Yeah, I'll probably do the YouTube thing, and then I'll put it, I'll put it out on vinyl and physical product and CD. And, you know, I'm with a heavy metal label called Metal Blade Records. So that's my other tie-in with the scene, is Metal Blade has been around for 42 years now. puts out my comedy albums, which is cool because they have bands like Cannibal Corpse and 6 Feet Under. So I don't have to worry about them censoring my material.
Yeah, that's great. All right, Don, this was great. Great chat. We'll have to do it again. And, you know, maybe we'll see you around. I'm hosting sometimes the Saturday night show at Fox News Saturday night. And, you know, maybe we'll get you in there to do panel. It's not for the whole show like it was on Red Eye, but, yeah. You know, we just had Joe Mackey on last week. So maybe that's something you want to do.
Yeah, I'd love to, man. And, you know, we've known each other a long time and, you know, I'm thrilled for you, man. You know, you found your niche in your world, which, I'm very much a viewer and fan of. So, you know, if we want to get into politics on another show or whatever, I'm down for that as well.
Excellent.
Cool. All right. Be well, man.
Thanks. Don Jameson, everybody. Bye.
Later.